Hello and welcome to the IFRS Interpretations Committee podcast for November 2014. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB, and I'm joined by April Pittman, Hannah King and Koichiro Karamuchi to talk about some of the issues that were discussed when the Interpretations Committee met in London on the 11th of November 2014. Now, the views that you'll hear today in this podcast will be those of the presenters and not necessarily those of the Interpretations Committee or the IASB. The first issue to look at today relates to the question of whether interest should be accreted on a long-term prepayment for the purchase of inventory. Now, April, can you tell us a bit about what this issue is and what the Interpretations Committee has been discussing?
That's right. Thanks, Michael. The Interpretation Committee received a request which was seeking clarification on accounting for long-term supply contracts for raw materials in which the purchaser agrees to make significant prepayments. And the question, as you say, is whether the purchaser should accrete the interest on the long-term prepayment by recognising interest income and a corresponding increase in the cost of inventories and, in due course, the cost of sales. Now, the paper discussed by the Interpretations Committee included a number of references to IFRS, such as IAS 38 Intangible Assets and IAS 16 Property, Plant and Equipment, that require that an interest charge is reflected separately when there are deferred settlement terms. We also referred in that paper to the requirements of IFRS 15, Revenue and Contracts with Customers, which apply to both prepayments and deferred payments by customers. As a result of their discussions, the Interpretations Committee thought it was clear that IFRS requires that a financing component of a transaction is presented separately. Now, when we conducted outreach on this issue in 2012, we found that some entities adjusted the contract price for financing arrangements and others did not, and that was taken to be evidence of diversity in practice. But we've got no information about whether the transactions considered in that outreach had a financing component that should have been presented separately, or whether they didn't contain a financing component and consequently no adjustment was required. Because we think that if the reported diversity arose because there are two different types of arrangements, the different outcomes are explained by the different facts and circumstances in the underlying transaction. Now, at the meeting, we recommended that we collect more evidence about the nature of individual supply contracts involving a long-term prepayment. And we suggested conducting detailed outreach that would enable us to draw out how we distinguish in each transaction whether the arrangement has a financing component or not. Now, of course, the Interpretations Committee acknowledged that it might be difficult in practice to do that, but they thought that identifying any difference between the cash selling price and the contract price would be significant when come to making that determination. And so the conclusion was that once we've conducted this outreach and we've identified what types of arrangements were involved, we'll then reassess this issue against the gender criteria.
Okay, that's good. Thanks very much. Our next issue to look at today relates to the translation of revenue that relates to a contract that has been denominated in a foreign currency, and in particular, what exchange rate should be used. Now, Hannah, can you describe what this issue is all about?
Yes, thank you, Michael. The Interpretations Committee has received a submission to do with which exchange rate should be used to report revenue when an entity enters into a foreign currency sales contract, and in particular, when that entity receives a non-refundable cash payment in advance of the delivery of the goods or services. The Interpretations Committee considered the three different views that were put forward. The first was that you would translate your revenue using the spot rate at the date you enter into an enforceable contract, or the contract becomes enforceable, whether or not you record the contract in the financial statements at that date. The second view was to recognise the revenue using the exchange rate that the advance payment is received, or falls due if earlier under IFRS 15, which is also the date that deferred revenue is recognised in the financial statements. And the third view put forward was that you would recognise your revenue using the exchange rate at the date the revenue is recognised, that is, when the goods or services are delivered to the customer. We undertook some outreach, which indicates that the issue affects a number of jurisdictions, particularly in the construction industry, and that there is diversity in practice, with some entities recognising revenue using the rate at the date of the non-refundable advance cash receipt, and some entities using the rate at the date of the transfer of the goods or services.
So what was the outcome of the Interpretation Committee's discussion?
Well, the Interpretations Committee looked at the guidance in IAS 21, which is the standard on the effects of changes in foreign exchange rates. IAS 21 requires that a foreign currency transaction should be initially recognised using the spot exchange rate at the date the transaction first qualifies for recognition in accordance with IFRS. The Interpretations Committee tentatively concluded that IAS 21 is not entirely clear on whether revenue should be recognised using the exchange rate at the date of advance cash payment, that is, when deferred revenue is recognised, or at the date of the recognition of the revenue, which is when the goods or services are transferred to the customer. However, most members of the Interpretation Committee think that recognising revenue by applying the exchange rate at the date of the advance payment may be a more appropriate interpretation of IAS 21. And this is because an entity is no longer exposed to foreign exchange risk once it has received the advance cash payment. This view treats the obligation to transfer the goods or services on recognition of the deferred revenue and the subsequent transfer of those goods and services, which gives rise to the recognition of revenue, as one single transaction. Given the outreach indicates diversity in practice and that IAS 21 is not entirely clear, the Interpretations Committee tentatively decided to add this issue to their agenda and to develop guidance as an interpretation of IAS 21. The Interpretations Committee also noted that the issue interacts with IFRS 15, which is the new standard on revenue from contracts with customers. The Interpretations Committee confirmed that to the extent that issues arise in respect of IFRS 15, it would inform the Transition Resource Group for Revenue, being the joint ISB and FASB forum that first discusses implementation issues in respect of IFRS 15.
So what's next from the point of view of the Interpretations Committee?
Well, next, the staff are going to perform a more detailed analysis of the issue, and then we'll bring this to a future meeting of the Interpretations Committee for their consideration, with a view to developing an interpretation of IAS 21.
Thank you. And our third issue today relates to the application of IAS 16 property, plant and equipment in the accounting for the proceeds and the costs of testing of an item of property, plant and equipment that is under construction. Koichiro, this issue was originally discussed in the previous Interpretations Committee meeting, wasn't it?
Exactly, Michael. In the July 2014 meeting, the Interpretations Committee discussed a request to clarify the accounting for proceeds received before a fixed asset is ready for use. For example, before a fixed asset becomes ready for use, an entity may test the fixed asset and sell sample products and receive proceeds. If the proceeds are less than the cost of testing, the proceeds can simply be deducted from the testing costs. However, if the proceeds exceed the cost of testing, the submitter claimed that it is not clear how to account for the proceeds from selling items produced while bringing a fixed asset to the location and condition necessary for it to be capable of operating in the manner intended by management. At the July meeting, the Interpretations Committee issued a tentative agenda decision that the amount by which net proceeds received exceed the cost of testing would be recognized in profit and loss and would not be offset against the cost of asset.
And what were the comments that were received against the tentative agenda decision?
Yes, the Interpretations Committee received comment letters and noted that the respondents were concerned about the implication of the agenda decision for the extractive and other industries. Those respondents noted that it is common in those industries to credit net proceeds in excess of the cost of testing against the cost of asset under construction, Accordingly, a number of practical issues were raised in the comment letters.
So how did the interpretations committee deal with this during this meeting?
Right. So the interpretations committee discussed the comment received and noted the concerns and decided to add this issue into its agenda. Some interpretations committee members commented that when the asset is available for use, in other words, when the asset is the location and the condition necessary for it to be capable of operating in the manner intended by management, is a significant judgment, and the interpretations committee may need to make analysis and make some clarifications.
Okay, and so what will be the next steps on this project?
The next step will be that the interpretations committee will analyze the issue further in a future meeting.
Okay, thank you. And to finish with this IFRIC update podcast, a mention about the tentative agenda decisions that will be included in the IFRIC update newsletter. There are 11 issues on which the Interpretations Committee reached decisions, tentative decisions, not to add items to its agenda. And these agenda decisions will be put out for comment for 60 days in the normal way. Amongst these are seven tentative agenda decisions relating to IFRS 11 on joint arrangements. These represent conclusion of a number of discussions by the Interpretations Committee over several months of a number of issues related to the application of IFRS 11. So those who have a particular interest in joint arrangements, this is certainly an area that is worth taking a look at in the IFRIC update newsletter. So that brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.